أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا وحبيبنا حبيب إله العالمين محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المنتجبين. In the context of what we were discussing in the past few nights, I would like to bring to your attention verse number 34 of Surah Tawbah. This verse created a real issue in the early history of Islam, both when the Quran was being compiled and in terms of the interpretation. Now, I recite the verse first and just give you a very quick meaning, and then I will discuss what issue did it create, and the two viewpoints which existed on this verse, which goes quite in line with what we are talking about, the ta'wil of the Quran and the battle for ta'wil of the Quran. Now the verse 34 of Surah Tawbah is A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. يا أيها الذين آمنوا إن كثيرا من الأحبار والرهبان ليأكلون أموال الناس بالباطل ويصدون عن سبيل الله والذين يكنزون الذهب والفضة ولا ينفقونها في سبيل الله فبشرهم بعذاب أليم. O you who believe, indeed, many of the Ahbar and Ruhban. Ahbar were the scholars of the Jewish faith, and Ruhban were the scholars of the Christian faith, or the monks of the Christian faith. So, talks about Ahlul Kitab, talks about Jews, talks about Christians, or some say that Ahbar and Ruhban are two different groups of the Jewish religious leaders. إِنَّ كَثِيرًا مِنَ الْأَحْبَارِ وَالرُّهْبَانِ لَيَأْكُلُونَ أَمْوَالَ النَّاسِ بِالْبَاطِلِ. They eat up people's wealth wrongfully. These are, of course, religious leaders. وَيَصُدُّونَ عَن سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ. And they bar from the path of Allah. And those who treasure up gold and silver and do not spend it in the way of Allah, inform them of a painful punishment. And then the following verse says, يَهُمَ يُحْمَى عَلَيْهَا فِي نَارِ جَهَنَّمْ فَتُكْوَى بِهَا جِبَاهُهُمْ وَجُنُوبُهُمْ وَظُهُورُهُمْ. On the day when these, that is the silver and gold, shall be heated in hellfire and therewith branded on their foreheads, their sides and their backs. And they are told, this is what you treasured up for yourself. Very alarming and very warnful sort of statement by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for those especially religious leaders who eat up the wealth of people wrongfully in the name of faith. This is, of course, what the verse is contextually talking about. But generally, it talks about treasuring money. Treasuring gold and silver. That's dirham and dinar. That was the, because gold and silver was the currency on the day in which they used for their transactions. It is reported from the Prophet, peace be on him, that when this verse was revealed, Prophet was moved very much. And he said, Tabban lil-dhahab, tabban lil-fiddah. Curse on gold, curse on silver. Tabban, they mean curse, or they be far away from us, cut off, may they be cut off from us. And then the Ashab said, oh, all of us are actually have ambition for gold and silver. We want to have money, wealth. So what should we seek? What should be our ambitions in life? And Prophet, peace be on him, said, لِسَانًا ذَاكِرًا وقلبا شاكرا وزوجة تعين أحدكم على دينه. You ask not for gold and silver, ask for a tongue which is all the time in remembrance of Allah, mentions the name of Allah, and a heart which is grateful, and a spouse which helps you with your faith, supportive of your faith. This is what is, of course, much, much better than gold and silver. Anyhow, that's just an admonition from the Prophet, peace be on him. And there's another interesting hadith, if I can find it here, from the Prophet, peace be on him, that he said to one of his companions, to Bilal actually, that, Ya Bilal, if you can die, if you can meet Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala poor, do that. Let me find the hadith. Yeah, it says to Bilal, if you can meet Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala poor, قال رسول الله يا بلال ألق الله فقيرا ولا تلقه ولا تلقه غنيا. Meet Allah poor, not rich. Well, this goes against all our mentality, isn't it? That we are after riches, we are after wealth. So what does Prophet mean by that? And if we do not actually seek wealth, we cannot spend it in way of faith, isn't it? نعم الأون على التقوى الدنيا. Dunya, wealth, is very good support for taqwa. So what does it mean that you try to meet Allah poor? He says, إِذَا رُزِقَتَ فَلَا تَخْبَى. If you are given plenty of wealth, do not hide it. وَإِذَا سُئِلْتَ فَلَا تَمْنَى. If you are asked for something, do not prevent it. Give it. Do not stop giving. And if you do this, you actually do not leave anything behind you. What the hadith is saying is that do not leave your money for after your death to be distributed without your control. You do it yourself. Not that you do not seek wealth. You seek wealth, but if you have actually given, when need comes, then you will meet Allah poor, although you have been very rich in this world. Although you have been very rich, you will meet Allah poor. Al-qillaha faqiran wa la ghaniya, not ghani. Okay, let's come back to the controversy of the on the verse. The controversy was with regards to two issues. One is a hadith reported by many, many scholars. Ibn Abi Shayba, Bukhari, Ibn Sa'd, Abu Hatam, and many others. They have reported this hadith, so this is somehow quite agreed upon hadith. Zayd ibn Wahab says that I was traveling, passing by Rabada. Rabada was the birthplace of Abu Zar. We discussed about Abu Zar last night and that he was deported by Uthman to Rabada. He said, I was passing by Rabada and I met Abu Zar. فَقُلْتُ مَا أَنزَلَكَ بِهَذِهِ الْأَرْضِ. Why have you ended up in this land? It was actually an uncultivated, uncivilized, uninhabited land. So why have you come here? And actually, Abu Zar and his wife were living there completely alone. No one else was there. They were actually banished to such a place. And you have heard when Abu Zar was dying, his wife was crying that, how can I bury you? I don't know how to do the burial and ghusl and kafan. I don't know. How should I somehow complete the ceremonies for you? And Abu Zar said, don't worry, the Prophet has told me that I will die alone, but a group of mu'minun will pass by and will bury me. So very quite alone in that place. And this happened, of course. Zayd ibn Wahab said that I asked Abu Zar, what has brought you to this land? He summarized, Abu Zar summarized, of course there was a long story, just made the long story short. He said, Kunna bisham, we were in Syria with Muawiyah. فَقَرَأْتُ وَالَّذِينَ يَكْنِزُونَ الذَّهَبَ وَالْفِضَّةَ وَلَا يُنْفِقُونَهَا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ فَبَشِّرْهُمْ بِعَذَابٍ أَلِيمٍ. Those who hoard and treasure gold and silver do not do infaq fi سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ. Of course, he will later explains, or I will explain from his tongue what he means by that. Not any type of wealth, not any person becoming wealthy. Specific type of wealth he is targeting. Those who do not spend it in the way of Allah, so give them the news of Adabun Alim, a painful punishment. Faqala Muawiyah. This is actually a verse he was continuously going to the gate of the palace of Muawiyah and was reciting this verse. And of course, explaining it. Faqala Muawiyah, ma hadhihi fina. هَذِهِ فِي أَهْلِ الْكِتَابِ. Muawiyah said, this verse is not about us. It's about أَهْلُ الْكِتَابِ. He says, إِنَّ كَثِيرًا مِنَ الْأَحْبَارِ وَالرُّحْمَانِ. Jews and Christian monks and scholars, what is it? What has it got to do with us? We are Muslims. Why should we be worried about this? فَقَالَ مُعَوِيَ مَا هَذِهِ فِينَا هَذِهِ فِي أَهْلِ الْكِتَابِ قُلْتُ أَنَا إِنَّهَا لَفِينَا وَفِيهِمْ. I said, no, it is about us and them. And that is why I am here now. You see, the difference of opinion, approach. The way Amirul Mu'mineen was looking at the Qur'an, actually taking lessons from everything, generalizing all the lessons, admonishments, rather than fixing it to a specific group of people. This is what Abu Zar was doing, and this is why he was banished here. This was about the explanation. And I will, of course, bring more hadith on this, which explains why they were so much upset by Abu Zar because of this. And actually, most of the exegetes, if we go to the books of exegesis, from the old days till now, they say that Muawiyah was right and Abu Zar was wrong, unfortunately. Because Abu Zar didn't know how the wealth should be spent, how the wealth is acquired. Now, regarding the compilation, the writing of the verse, you know that the Quran, just a brief, very, very shortly I explain, the Quran was compiled by the companions of the Prophet during his lifetime. And companions had their own copies of the Quran. Abdullah ibn Mas'ud had his own copy, Abu Musa had his own copy, Ubay ibn Ka'b had his own copy, and they were reading from it. However, after the demise of the Prophet, Abu Bakr and Umar ibn al-Khattab, they also wanted to have a copy. And they asked Zayd ibn Thabit to write a copy of the Quran for them. And this is the hadith which comes in Bukhari, that Zayd ibn Thabit said that I went and searched on parchments, stones, bones, and these things. I brought ayat together and I compiled it. Many Sunni scholars think that this was the only Quran compiled after the Prophet, peace be on him. However, this is not a correct view, for overwhelming evidence that the Muslims did not refer to this Quran at all. This Quran was placed in Hafsa's house. It was archived, so to speak. Why? The reason is Zayd ibn Thabit was a young man. He was about 23, 24 years old. Although he was one of the scribes of the Prophet, peace be on him, but he didn't have that knowledge of the Quran like Ubay ibn Ka'b, like Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, like Ali ibn Abi Talib. So people did not very much take heed of that compilation. And the compilation was left in Hafsa's house. This is what the history says. And the Muslims had other copies for themselves they were reading. Now, these readings became quite different from each other. Even with the copies, when they were copying, they actually made mistakes in copying. They were hearing something and writing it the way they heard it while it was a mistake. So at the time of the Uthman, at the time of Uthman ibn Affan, the companions collectively decided to unify or to create a unified copy of the Quran, an authentic copy of the Quran, and of course burning all other copies. And this actually, of course, needed the authority of the caliph. And that's why Uthman authorized it, and he ordered that this should be done, and all companions came together and they compiled a Quran which was agreed by everyone, every Sahabi, including Ali ibn Abi Talib, including Ubay ibn Ka'b and others. They all agreed upon this unified copy. All other copies were burnt. This copy is what we are reading now. This copy, which was compiled at the time of Uthman, is what we are reading now, not any copy of other companions who compiled their own personal copies. And this copy is widely reported to us. It is mutawatir. So epistemologically, it gives us a certain knowledge that this is what was compiled during the time of companions of the Prophet, of the Quran, which they had heard from the Prophet, they had written down, all copies came together. And for this copy, of course, they did not trust Zayd ibn Thabit. Because they didn't trust in his integrity, they didn't trust in his knowledge. So they removed him, as he was appointed by Uthman for the head of the committee, they removed him and they placed Ubay ibn Ka'b, who was trusted by everyone and was the most knowledgeable, of course, after Ali ibn Abi Talib, in terms of Quran recitation, and this copy was compiled. And I think this was something which was a turning point in Muslim history. Had the companions not done this, we wouldn't have had the Quran now. Now, you don't object that, well, Allah says, إِنَّا نَحْنُ نَزَّلْنَا الذِّكْرَ وَإِنَّا لَهُ لَحَافِظُونَ. Well, this is the way he protected the Quran. He always do things through its means. Not that he does it by miracle or something. This is the way Allah protected the Quran. Now, when this Quran was compiled, some of the companions had their own views about the way they had heard the verses from the Prophet, peace be on him. Of course, unless there was overwhelming evidence that this was recited in this way, the companions wouldn't have agreed to put it in the Quran, including, as I said, there was a committee, and of course supervised by the most knowledgeable, and we believe that it was supervised by Ali ibn Abi Talib as well. Not that he directly was involved, but he was, of course, supervising, looking what they were doing. He did not object to anything they compiled, and therefore that means that he was quite happy of that compilation. Now, when this Quran was being compiled, some companions came and said, okay, we have heard from the Prophet that he recited this verse. And then the knowledgeable companions, they said, no, this was not a verse of the Quran. This was a hadith you heard, and you thought that this is the verse of the Quran. So they were rejecting different people coming and saying that this is part of the Quran. We heard from the Prophet such and such. Now, this is where, of course, disagreement comes about reciting this verse. Some people were very adamant, including the hadith. This is from Durr al-Manthur of As-Suyuti. He says that some companions wanted to drop waw from this verse, because that changes the meaning completely. Now look how clever this is. Inna Uthman ibn Affan lamma arada an yaktub al-masahif. When Uthman decided to write the masahif, the copies of the Quran, as I said, this was under his authority, not that he did it. Inna Uthman ibn Affan lamma arada an yaktub al-masahif. أرادوا أن يلقوا الواو التي في البراءة. They wanted to drop the waw which is in براءة. Which waw? Look, listen to the verse now. يا أيها الذين آمنوا إن كثيرا من الأحبار والرهبان ليأكلون أموال الناس بالباطل. A great number of Ahbar and Ruhban, they eat up the property of wealth of the people wrongfully. Now, وَالَّذِينَ يَكْنِزُونَ الذَّهَبَ وَالْفِزَّةِ or الَّذِينَ يَكْنِزُونَ الذَّهَبَ وَالْفِزَّةِ. This waf here is very important. And this is what actually Abu Dhar was arguing with others as well. Why is it important? Because if it's without waf, الَّذِينَ يَكْنِزُونَ الذَّهَبَ وَالْفِزَّةِ would be the attribute of Al-Ahbar wal-Ruhban. So it doesn't concern us. It's related to Al-Ahbar and Ruhban of Yahud. يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا إِنَّ كَثِيرًا مِنَ الْأَحْبَارِ وَالْرُّهْبَانِ لَيَأْكُلُونَ أَمْوَالَ النَّاسِ بِالْبَاطِلِ. Who are these Al-Ahbar wal-Ruhban? الَّذِينَ يَكْنِزُونَ الذَّهَبَ وَالْفِزَّةِ, those who treasure gold and silver. But if we say وَالَّذِينَ يَكْنِزُونَ الذَّهَبَ وَالْفِزَّةِ, this is not an attribute of Ahbar and Ruhban anymore. This is very general. It's very general. Anyone treasuring gold and silver and not spending it in the way of God is included. Now, As-Suyuti mentions that when Uthman was compiling the Mus'haf, they wanted to drop Waw from وَالَّذِينَ يَكْنِزُونَ الذَّهَبَ وَالْفِزَّةِ قَالَ أَبِي ذَرٍ. As I said, all the companions were all ears and eyes watching what was being compiled. Although the committee was composed of only 12 people, but all the companions were watchful. What was happening? What was being compiled? قَالَ أَبُو ذَرْ لَتُلْحِقَنَّهَا أَوْ لَأَذَعَنَّ سَيْفِي عَلَىٰ آتِقِ. You put this wow here, or I take my sword and fight you. And of course, he had many supporters among other companions, including Ali ibn Abi Talib, certainly. Supporters that this waf should be here. Now, this waf is a very simple waf, but you see, sometimes things become very, very significant in history. Because this waf actually defined the approach to Islam's attitude towards wealth. This waw was actually defining here. So Abu Dhar said, you put this waw here, or I take my sword and fight you. فَأَلْحَقُوهَا. Because everyone knew that this waw, that they had heard it from the Prophet, that this waw was there, and they put it there. So, what was it which was annoying Abu Dhar? Was it the wealth of people? No. Of course, there were many wealthy people at the time of the Prophet, after the Prophet, in the time of the two caliphs, who, of course, Abu Dhar accepted their sort of style with regards to Baytul Mal. He didn't object. He was objecting the style of Uthman ibn Affan to Baytul Mal. And he was reciting this in Medina every day. He was coming and reciting this verse in Medina until Uthman deported him to Syria. And he was reciting it there as well. Now, a couple of traditions explaining what was the position. Abdul Razak, in his Musannaf, says that, and this is reported in Tafsir al-Qummi as well, so it's both from Shia and Sunni sources. This is, the wording is from Tafsir al-Qummi, كَانَ أَبُو ذَرَ الْغِفَارِ يَغْدُو كُلَّ يَوْمٍ وَهُوَ فِي شَامٍ. Every day he was coming, فَيُنَادِي بِأَعْلَى صَوْتِهِ. When he was in Sham, he was shouting at the top of his voice, Bashir Ahl al Kunuz Bekayan fil Jabah, Wakayan fil Junub, Wakayan fil Zuhur. Good news for those who treasure money, with heating up those money, putting them on their foreheads, sides, and backs, the verse actually. And this was somehow a response to Muawiyah, who said that this wealth that we collect is our wealth. This doesn't belong to Muslimin. He said, "Malul Allah lana wal ardu arduna." And this is what, of course, he said, the territory belongs to us. And this was the attitude of some of the companions, which thought that the fay, the Baytul Mal of Muslimun, was under the control of the caliph. He can do whatever he wants. And this was very different from the style of Umar and Abu Bakr. They didn't go this far, of course. They didn't go this way. They were saying that this belongs to Muslimun. We are just trustees. We distribute it. However, from the time of Uthman, the attitude changed. The ta'wil of everything changed. The approach to everything changed. And they said that, no, this belongs to us. We can put it wherever we think is correct and is right. And here Sa'sa'at ibn Subhan and Ahnaf ibn Qais actually objected to Muawiyah. What is this sort of a statement that you are making? Everyone knows that this belongs to Muslimun. Ibn Athir in Al-Kamil fi Tariq. As I said, these are history. This is not Aqidah. This is history. He says that Muawiyah thought that Abu Zar is coming to his palace and actually reciting this verse repeatedly because he doesn't have anything himself, because he's poor and they are rich. And so he envies them. He's jealous. So he sent one night, he sent 1,000 dinar for him. 1,000 dinar was a lot. With 50 dinars, you could buy a very big house. So you can imagine what is 1,000 dinar. It's in Nahjul Balagha that when Shurayh al-Qazi had bought a big house with 80 dinars, and that's much later, at the time of Ali ibn Abi Talib, Amirul Mu'mineen rebuked him that this is not something that someone like you would be suitable to someone like you. So sent him 1,000 dinar. Now, where did he bring this 1,000 dinar? It was from Baytul Mal, isn't it? But he thought that, well, I can spend it the way I wish. So Abu Zar accepted all the 1,000 dinars. And Muawiyah became very happy. That, okay, now I have the weak point. And the same night, he went and distributed the whole 1,000 among the poor in the city, in Sham. Now, tomorrow, Muawiyah, because he wanted actually to use this as a ploy, he sent his servant to Abu Zar and said to him, go to Abu Zar and say that I'm very sorry, I made a mistake. This money was meant for someone else. And I, by mistake, brought it to you. So if I do not take it back from you, then Muawiyah will punish me severely. Can you please give me back the money? Now, Abu Zar said, no problem. I give you back the whole money, but give me 3 days, because I have to go and collect it from all those people among whom I have distributed it. And Muawiyah thought, well, this is shameful. I mean, Abu Zar going and telling people, look, this money was given to me by mistake. I have to give it back. So he said, leave him. And then he wrote to Uthman that if you want Syria, remove Abu Zar from here. And of course, why he couldn't do anything with Abu Zar? Because he was the companion of the Prophet. And he told Abu Zar once that if I was allowed to do whatever I wanted with a companion of the Prophet, because Uthman has ordered me, you do not touch companions of the Prophet, I would have known what to do with you. So he sent him back. Now, one question. Wasn't Hussein a companion of the Prophet? Let alone being the grandson of the Prophet. He was a companion of the Prophet or not? He was. So, you see, at the time of Muawiyah in Sham, in Syria, he has the orders, do not touch any companion of the Prophet. Because this is going to create great disorder among Muslims, that we are killing companions of the Prophet. Now look what, how the Muslim community has degenerated, that they kill Hussein alayhi salam, and no one says anything. Because now they feel that they are absolutely established and firm. What was this wealth which Abu Zar was very angry about? He was angry because what belonged to the poor, and people were really poor, were really poor. When Ali came to power, you see how he lived. Just as he explains in Nahjul Balagha, I take 2 loaves of bread a day and nothing else. And when he was asked about it, he said, because I want to live like the poor people in my sovereignty, under my sovereignty. So people were really poor. They couldn't afford even their bread. And look how some people had become rich. And this was not what they had gained by their own business or by their own efforts. When all the booties of Egypt came to Uthman, and you cannot imagine, I mean, you cannot count how much it was, how many thousands, hundreds, thousands of dinar it was. He gave all that to Marwan ibn al-Hakam. All that to Marwan ibn al-Hakam. Marwan was his cousin. Hakam ibn Abi al-As was his uncle. Affan was the son of Abi al-As, and Hakam was son of Abi al-As. And this is what outraged Abu Zar. Once, in a meeting with Abu Zar, with Uthman, he said, I heard from the Prophet, when the descendants of Abu al-As come to power and their number is 30, then corruption will come. And Uthman asked the people who were around him, who were companions of the Prophet as well, have you heard this from the Prophet? They said, no. So he said, you are lying, therefore. You are lying because no one has heard this from the Prophet. He said, are you really thinking that I am attributing a lie to the Prophet? He said, okay, I will ask Ali. He summoned Ali, peace be on him. Ali came and he said that Abu Zar is saying, this hadith is reporting this hadith from the Prophet. Have you heard this? He said, no, I haven't. He said, so Abu Zar is a liar. He said, no, Abu Zar is not a liar. I believe in him. And I believe that Prophet has said it. I haven't heard it. But I believe that Prophet has said it. Why? Because I heard from the Prophet that no earth has ever seen and no sky has ever shadowed on a person more honest and more frank than Abu Zar. And then he said, have you not heard this from the Prophet? They said, yes, we have heard this from the Prophet. So Abu Zar is correct. Abu Zar is right. So he gave the whole ghanima of Egypt to Marwan ibn al-Hakam. Was he allowed to do it? This is what outraged Abu Zar. Was this not to be distributed among Muslims? This was a different approach. He gave 300,000 dirham to Harith ibn al-Hakam, another brother of Marwan ibn al-Hakam. He gave 300,000 to Abdullah ibn Usaid. And Mas'udi mentions that some of companions and people who were actually close to Osman, when they passed away, they had such a wealth that even we cannot imagine in our imagination. So what had happened? What had happened? Why that sort of austere, an ascetic life at the time of the Prophet, al-muhajirun, al-ansar, living in that austere way, having that sacrificial attitude towards faith, now have come to this issue. Of course, then when Ali comes to power, they expect the same thing from him. They expect the same thing. And because Ali said, by God, I will return everything. I will take away everything given to you, which you did not deserve as your share from Baytul Mal, Even if you have given it as mahar to women, I will take it back from you. Of course, he makes everyone enemy with him. This was a different ta'wil, this was a different attitude than what the some of the companions had. Now look, Mas'udi in Muruj al-Zahab, he mentions when Zubayr passed away, he had 50,000 dinar cash. 50,000 dinar cash. Just remember, I mentioned you could buy a big house with 50 dinar. 50,000 dinar cash. 1,000 horses, 1,000 slaves, and many, many houses and farms and lands, and houses in Kufa, in Alexandria, in Basra, and his city in Basra was so splendid. Sorry, his house in Basra was so splendid, so glorious, that in the year 332, when Mas'udi is writing this, he says this house is famous still in Basra. 332. Talhat ibn Ubaidullah. Now, these two broke their pledge with Ali. Because, I don't want to say because or why, certainly Ali didn't have the same attitudes. Ali actually made it clear for everyone by not giving a little bit more wheat to Aqil when his children, his daughters were hungry. He actually made it clear for everyone that do not expect that when Baytul Mal comes, when booties come, I'm going to give 100,000, 200,000, 50,000 dinar or dirham to any one of you. Certainly, I'm not going to do this. So when Talha passed away, his wealth was estimated to be 100,000 dinar. And he had 1,000 dinar income, 1,000 dirham income daily in Iraq. And 10,000 dinar in Syria. Zayd ibn Thabit, who was very close to Osman, of course, and the compiler of the first Quran for Abu Bakr and Umar, when he passed away, his silver and gold were being broken by hammer. So much just gold amassed in one place and silver amassed in one place, not even using it for business, just amassing it in one place. Now this is what Abu Zar was saying, الَّذِينَ يَكْنِزُونَ الذَّهَبَ وَالْفِضَّةَ وَلَا يُنْفِقُونَهَا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ فَبَشِّرْهُمْ بِعَذَابٍ أَلِيمٍ. And Muawiyah used to say that this is about Jews. He said, no, this is about them and us. This is the difference in understanding, difference in approach. Okay, that's enough. Because we get angry when we discuss these issues, of course. Let me talk a little bit about Abbas now. A completely change of climate. And now, from wealth and money and gold and silver, we come to loyalty and sacrifice and faith and glory. Of course, not vain glory. Glory which really Abbas is deserved of. Abbas was born on 26th of Hijrah. So that is in the, of course, rulership of Uthman, he was born. So when his father passed away, Amirul Mu'minin, he had about 14 years old. He was about 14 years old. And therefore, in Karbala, he should have been 34 years, because Karbala happened 20 years after the demise, the martyrdom of Amirul Mu'minin alayhi salam. His mother, Fatima, of the tribe Banu Kalab, which later on, because she gave birth to four sons for Amirul Mumin, he was called Ummul Baneen, mother of the sons. And the sons were Abbas, Abdullah, Ja'far, and Uthman, all of whom were killed in Karbala. And you certainly have heard that when he was mourning his sons in Medina, in Baqi, he made the so form of four graves, and he used to go there every day and mourning for his sons, saying that Ya man ra al Abbas karra ala jamahir al naqad wa warahu min abna'i haydara kull laysin zi labad. Has anyone seen Abbas when he was going to the battle and sons of Ali, like lions, were going after him? And many other poems that she used to recite there. There's a story that Amirul Mu'mineen knew somehow with that knowledge of the Imam that Abbas is going to make such a sacrifice and lose his hands. And therefore he used to kiss his hands, Abbas's hands, very frequently. And of course, the report is not authenticated. However, it's not strange, because sometimes things are inspired, people are inspired, people of that caliber are inspired by certain knowledge, which of course we are unaware of. Remember in Surah Qasas, وَأَوْحَيْنَا إِلَىٰ أُمِّ مُوسَىٰ أَنْ أَرْضَئِهِ, we inspired to Umm Musa, milk your son, فَإِذَا خِفْتِ عَلَيْهِ فَأَلْقِيهِ فِي الْيَمِّ, when you are afraid, when you fear for him, then throw him in the river. إِنَّا رَادُّهُ إِلَيْكِ وَجَعِلُهُ مِنَ الْمُرْسَلِينَ, we are going to return him to you, and we are going to make him one of the messengers. So this news that Musa was going to become a messenger, she knew it right from the beginning, even before committing him to the Nile. She knew that he was going to be a messenger. So it's not very strange if we think that this was something, this was a knowledge known by Amirul Mu'min alayhi salam. A group of historians report from Amirul Mu'mineen that he said, "Inna waladi al Abbas zuq al mazaqa." My son Abbas has been fed knowledge. Zuq al mazaqa, has been fed knowledge in the highest way possible. And this is very interesting, because the Imams were ulul ilm. They were given knowledge by Allah. Abbas, of course, was not an imam. But Amirul Mu'mineen said that I have fed him knowledge. So he is very knowledgeable, a very knowledgeable person. And of course, he married when he was 18 years old with the daughter of Abdullah ibn Abbas, the great Hebrul Ummah, the greatest scholar of the Ummah. And from that marriage, he had Ubaydullah and Fadl, who were scholars themselves and their descendants. So if we look into Ilm al-Hadith and Ilm al-Rajal, we see many descendants of Abbas, peace be on him, who were reporters of Hadith, who were jurists, who were people of literature, ascetics, scholars, and like that. And Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says that Kana Ammun al-Abbas Nafidul Basira Sulbul Iman Jahada Mai Abi Abdullah alayhi salam Wa Ubliya Bala'an Hasanan Wa Mada Shahida. My uncle Abbas, he had penetrating insight, Nafidul Basira, Sulbul Iman, solid faith he had. He fought with Abu Abdullah alayhi salam, wa ubliya bala'an hasana, and he was tried in a nice way. So now this shows that the whole incident of Karbala was bala'un hasan, not bala'un sayyi'. It's very different. In the Quran we have about Banu Israel, wa balawnahum bil hasanati was sayyi'at. We try them with good and evil, with good things, with bad things, things that they liked, things that they disliked. We tried them, and all the tribulations in their life, and all the good things and pleasures in their life are the benefits of life are trial for us. However, Was this sort of death and martyrdom bala'un hasan? Was it khair or was it shar? Kullu nafsin dha'iqatul maut wa nabluukum bishar wal khair fitna. We always try you with shar or with khair. But was the incident of Karbala shar or khair? Certainly it was khair. It was khair for Hussein and his companions and shar for the Muslim Ummah, of course. It was shar for the Muslim Ummah. The way they, of course, treated a companion of the Prophet, the grandson of the Prophet, the family of the Prophet. Now, I finish by this hadith from As-Saduq Rahmatullah Alayh, who says that Nadhara Ali ibn al-Husayn Sayyidul Abidin ila Ubaydullah ibn Abbas ibn Ali ibn Abi Talib. I said that Abbas alayhi salam had two sons, Ubaydullah and Fadl. Imam Zainul Abidin one day looked at Ubaydullah, son of Abbas alayhi salam, and just looking at him, he started to cry. فاستعبر. Tears fell down from his eyes. ثم قال ما من يوم أشد على رسول الله من يوم أحد قتل فيه أمه حمزة ابن عبد المطلب أسد الله وأسد رسوله. There was no day more bitter than Uhud for the Prophet, in which Hamza, أسد الله, this was his title, the Lion of God and the Lion of the Prophet, he was killed in this battle. After that, the most bitter day, بَعْدُهُ يَوْمَ مُوتَهُ, the day in which Battle of Muta took place in Syria, in which قُتَلَ فِيهِ إِبْنُ عَمِّهِ جَعْفَرُ بْنُ عَبِي طَالِبٍ. Ja'far al-Tayyar was martyred on that day. Then he said, ثُمَّ قَال وَلَا يَوْمْ كَيَوْمِ الْحُسَيْنِ. But none of these days is similar to the day of Hussein, whether for Hussein himself or for the Prophet, or for all the Ahlul Bayt. قَتَلُوهُ بَغْيًا وَظُلْمًا. They killed him while he was mazloom. They killed him while they oppressed him, they wronged him. وَأُدْوَانًا, out of animosity. Rahimallah al-Abbas, and may God have mercy on Abbas. فَلَقَدْ آثَرَ وَأُبْلِيَ وَفَدَى أَخَاهُ بِنَفْسِهِ. He sacrificed himself for his brother until his hands were cut off, and Allah for that will give him two wings, just like my uncle Ja'far ibn Abi Talib, that he was given two wings and he was Ja'far al-Tayyar. Abbas is also tayyar. Wa inna lil Abbas inda Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala manzilatan yaghbituhu biha jami'u shuhada yawm al-qiyamah. And Abbas has a position with Allah that all shuhada would envy him on the day of judgment. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi tahirin.
Are there any questions? Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Thank you very much for your lecture. Just one quick question, if I may, about Al-Abbas. His arms were cut off, or was it his hands? Is there any indication in the hadith about that?
I don't know. Sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
You said that Usman, he did the ta'wil, yes, after the Prophet's death, the interpretation.
He had his own interpretation,
yeah,
yes.
Interpretation. Yeah. So what was the timescale when the Prophet died and Usman doing it? Was it 10 years, 30 years, 40 years? Because, you know, because I've heard this from English people, outside people, but why did not the Prophet, but you know, when he had so many companions, put the book together then? What was preventing him?
No, the book was there. The book was put together. But even now, we have the book now compiled, established, printed. However, we disagree about the way we understand it. We disagree about the interpretation. If you are talking about the compilation at the time of Uthman, that was to unify all the copies. And that has a very, very long story. It was something which was urgently needed and was done properly, appropriately, and that is why now we have this Quran intact coming to us from the Prophet, peace be on him.
But what I want to ask is, so, when was it put together? After the Prophet died? 10 years after? 20 years?
You see, the companions wrote it according to what we understand. The companions wrote it at the time of the Prophet, and they had the compiled copies. Like Abdullah ibn Mas'ud had his own copy, Ubay ibn Ka'b had his own copy, Ali ibn Abi Talib had his own copy. They had their own copies, okay? However, these copies, when they were copied again here and there, and went to far away, to Egypt, to Syria, to Iraq, to Persia, then people started to somehow recite it differently, write it differently. That is why in the year, well, Uthman of course came to power 24 Hijra, that was about 13 years after the Prophet, 12 or 13 years after the demise of the Prophet, and just a couple of years after that, about year 30, this was done. So 20 years after the Prophet. Yes.
Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Thank you very much. Is there another way of pronouncing this verse or narration from Imam Zain al-Abidin? I'm asking, I'm not claiming that I know. Abla, Bala, and Hassan, because I hear that version of pronunciation in other instances.
Does maybe more correct. Yeah.
No, I'm not. I mean,
Obliya is majhul, of course. And for me, I understand it this way. That's,
I see.
But Abla, Bala, and Hasana,
you have not
correct.
Come across it with the...
No, I haven't, no.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Well, yeah. I know history is complicated, but is... I have a question. Did Imam Ali or the other Imams have anything complimentary to say about Uthman? At all, or to a limited extent?
Did Imams had anything?
Yes, do we have anything nice about him in our hadith or in our literature, which you quote from various sources? Complimentary. Thank you.
We may have, I cannot remember now, but we may have something. What is usually mentioned is that the whole course of Muslim history changed after the four caliphs. So these things which happened at the time of Uthman were not so dramatic until it actually gave rise to the rulership of Banu Umayyah, Muawiyah, and then Ali Marwan, and then things changed from Khilafah to Mulukiyah. And therefore, yes, we could have a praise for that period of the four caliphs. Despite, of course, lots of misgivings that we have, we might have a praise for that. However, things started to deviate from here, from the time of Uthman. This is well-known fact. He actually interpreted his generosity towards his family as Salatul Rahim. And said, this is my way. The caliphs before me had their own ways, and this is my way. They did it for the sake of God. I do it for the sake of God. So this was the beginning of this great rift between the seerah of the Prophet and, of course, the seerah of the Mulukiyah that we had.
Thank you very much, Sheikh. I think I'll end there. Salawat.